I hope 13's a lucky number, because that's the episode number of the DVD Marquee Show you're listening to right now. I'm Jeff Rosato, and I'm a pickin'.
I'm Stan Williams, and I'm a grinning.
So what's the word with them?
She's gone.
Can't raise her?
No, I can't.
So what now?
I can't let her go, Brain. I was set to, but I can't. I don't think I can.
Do you think you can help her?
No.
You think you can get this straight? Maybe break some deserving teeth?
Yeah, I think I could.
Well?
Tell me to walk from this, Brain. I'm gonna drop it.
Walk from it? Drop it? You're thick, Brendan.
Yes, I am.
You know, if some up-and-coming director had come up to me and said, hey, I'm putting together this film, it's going to have these high school kids kind of blending into a film noir kind of plot line, I might have said, lots of luck, kid. But Brick is an absolutely brilliant original mystery that may have borrowed a few pages from the likes of classics like Murder, My Sweet, Out of the Past, and the like, but emerges with a style all its own. I don't know if it's kosher to mention a fellow podcast on our show, but since podcasting is about breaking the rules, I'm going to do so right here. There's this podcast out of Chicago called Film Spotting. I've told you about it on numerous occasions, hosted by Adam Kempinar and Sam Van Haldren, and they were just over the moon about this movie, and I cannot help but agree with them. I think this is the best film I have seen in 2006. Stan, what's your take on it?
I'm right there with you. I don't know if I would call it brilliant necessarily, and I don't know if it's necessarily the best movie I've seen this year, but wow. This one really knocked my socks off. I had heard of it. I was familiar with the title. I didn't really know what it was about, so I wasn't quite prepared for such a complex mystery. I almost wish I had known that beforehand, so right. I would have paid a little more attention, because to be honest, at the end of it, I'm still not sure I understand how everything tied together, but I kept thinking this is like a weird combination of the visual style of Napoleon Dynamite mixed with a little bit of the tone of River's Edge. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember.
Crispin Glover from about 20 years ago. With a little bit of like a Charles Bronson revenge movie thrown in for a good measure.
It's funny that you mentioned those two, actually three, styles of filmmaking, because I was thinking more along the lines of a Twin Peaks episode without all the eccentric, weird visuals and all that. You know, a much more accessible David Lynch movie.
Yeah, well, like when I mentioned Napoleon Dynamite, I mean, these movies could not be more different. It was the kind of that sparse, drab look it had to it, and you can't help but notice how, aside from the main characters, there don't seem to be any extras or anything. It's like every scene seems, it's like these two characters, and and there's this weird quality, like there's not really anybody else out there.
I'm only familiar with Jeremy Gordon Levitt. Actually, I think he's going by Joseph Gordon Levitt, since he's a man now. I'm only familiar with him via Third Rock from the Sun, but my God, what a terrific performance.
I was watching this and I was like, this guy is the coolest character I've seen in a movie in a long time. I mean, he's Steve McQueen cool in this thing, and that blew me away. He's a badass. He's a badass with glasses, and I love that. Another one, and I didn't even realize it was him until it was about three quarters of the way through the movie, was Lucas Haas.
Uh-huh.
Here's the little kid from Witness apparently playing Barnabas Collins.
Sorry about this, kid. But what the hell with what you said before? Where you were at with all of us and tug a fist away, you gotta use your nut. Allay the situation. So yeah, you're not scared of me. I got it. But I'm also thinking you're a little nuts now. So you've got that trade-off with your situation. But nuts isn't all bad. So maybe it was a good play. I don't know.
There's great acting, a good script, good direction, and really I don't want to say much more about it because I think the less you know about it going in, the better. Although, pay attention because it does get pretty intricate.
it's one of those movies that you're going to have to pause if you're going to go get something from the fridge or something. I mean, if you miss one thing, you're going to be going, so where's the story headed now? I mean, you got to stay with it.
It's perfect for DVD because it is a movie I think you're going to want to go back and watch again. I know I do.
And there's some other great performances. I cannot leave this review without mentioning the unbelievably talented Nora Zettner, who played Laura. I mean, what a breakout role for her. You know, she had that 1940s, what's the term that I'm looking for? Femme fatale.
Mm-hmm.
Had that femme fatale thing going on just perfectly.
I agree with you. Emily DeRaven, you know, from Lost, who's,
right.
She's not on screen very often, but her character, I mean, what happens to her character pretty much drives the story here. And I think even she made enough of an impression that even though she's not on screen the whole time, her presence is still felt.
You know, once you get that Claire thing out of the way, you know, her character for people on Lost, you know, my baby. But once you get that out of the way, you just completely forget that girl on Lost. I mean, she's very good in this as well.
And any movie when you got John Shaft as the vice principal,
you know,
it's a thumbs up in my book.
We have also got to mention the incredible cinematography by Steve Yetlin and the editing, which amazingly was done by Rian Johnson. Talk about a tour de force, not only directing, writing, but editing as well.
She has a commentary here on the DVD. It's a fun commentary to listen to. It's always nice to hear somebody who's like, you know, really into telling you, you know, about where it's not, well, this happened and then this happened. You know, he kind of goes into the story, the origins of it and everything. And it's a fun listen.
I agree with you. It was very casual but spirited. It's not scene specific, but that's where I felt the strength lies. It's kind of a talk show kind of format. You know, mm-hmm. He spends about the first 20 minutes kind of talking about it and then talks to a couple of the co-stars, a couple of the behind the scenes folks. And it's just very well done. I was very entertained by it. Probably one of the better commentary tracks I've heard this year.
And this really is the sort of movie. I mean, at the end of it, I was like, okay, who did this? You know, I instantly want to go back, go to the commentary and go, okay, where the hell did this come from?
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is I recommend this one about as highly as I can recommend anything.
I'm right with you, pal. Not only is it a great movie supported by a great commentary, it's also got incredible sound. I mean, you can just feel those punches, the bones cracking, the atmospheric effects, the soundtrack. Just absolutely marvelous. And the picture is just switchblade sharp. Believe the hype, DVD brethren. Brick is not only one of the best films of the year, it's also one of the best DVDs of 2006.
Help! Help! Am I dead?
You're not dead. You've been taken against your will.
Kobe? Who is that? Dr. Phil? What the hell's going on?
I don't know. I was doing a show on teens with abandonment issues, and suddenly I woke up here.
Man, those kids are going to be pissed.
That was a clip from Scary Movie 4, the latest in the trilogy, or now quadrilogy, of successful movies from Miramax. And Jeff, I just got to say right up front, I didn't find this movie scary at all.
You're kidding. You did find it funny, though, I hope.
I did. I gotta admit, I chuckled pretty consistently throughout this whole movie.
I thought it started out strongly. The sequence with Dr. Phil and Shaquille O'Neal, just absolutely brilliant stuff. Just a brilliant knockoff of the Saw movies. But after about a couple of more parodies down the line, I think it was kind of like the lives that you get in the video game. You know, like you see the level of the energy you have left, and it keeps draining and draining. And it just, you know, mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, midway through it, it's just, it didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, there are some scattered laughs during the second half of the film. I did find myself chuckling and even, you know, a couple of good belly laughs here and there, but for the most part it was just kind of like warmed over Airplane.
Well, speaking of Airplane, I mean, I worship the Zucker brothers and Jim Abrams and even Pat Proft, you know, who's worked with them a lot before. You know, of course, the first two movies in this series were done by the Wayans brothers, you know,
right.
And I think relied a lot more on sort of gross-out humor, you know, and paved the way, you know, for them to work their way up the ladder to such stuff as Little Man. But I don't know. I mean, I admit it. I'm just happy to see David Zucker doing this sort of thing. I miss this sort of movie. And it's not even, I wouldn't even, you said the opening sequence, you know, was brilliant. I wouldn't even call anything in this movie brilliant. I would call their earlier work, certainly. Airplane, Top Secret, all of that.
brilliant. I've always argued that it's smart, dumb humor, and there's a difference between smart, dumb, and dumb, dumb. Unfortunately, you're right. I mean, you know, the scary movies that they've done, they do tend to lean a little more towards the dumb, dumb, but there's still, I still see glimmers of that smart, dumb, and I don't know, it's just me. That was enough for me. I mean, it's kind of sad, I think, for me, really, to look, basically, I mean, one of my heroes, really, in terms of writers and directors, you know, taking the Wayans Brothers scraps, you know, it's a little depressing, but I don't know, I had enough goodwill, and I chuckled, not so much out loud, but I chuckled to myself pretty consistently throughout this. The Million Dollar Baby thing. I mean,
I'll give you that one.
That alone. And let's be honest, if you're interested in Scary Movie 4, you know exactly what to expect. You know, I don't think anybody, you know, is going to be surprised by what sort of movie they're getting here. I did actually find it a lot funnier than Scary Movie 3, for what it's worth. But yeah, I mean, this one gets a recommendation from me based on basically my goodwill towards the Zuckers, Abrams, Proft. And like I said, I did laugh, and I think enough to recommend it. Kind of a silly way to recommend it. If you're in just the right mood, I think you know, you could do worse.
I think part of the problem is Craig Bierko as the male lead. I like him a lot. He's done some good movies. Very underrated movie called The 13th Floor. I don't know if you've seen it or not. I highly recommend that. He's been on Broadway and in The Music Man, and he's a talented guy. But just for some reason, he just did not work as a male lead. I wish they could have gotten the male lead to be a gentleman that makes a cameo in the very beginning of this movie, whom you might remember from a couple of movies called Hot Shots. The sequence with, can we give it away? I don't know if we ought to give it away or not for people that haven't seen it yet, but what the hell. Charlie Sheen makes a absolutely gut-busting cameo in the beginning of this movie with Anna Faris, who also returns from the first two films in the series. And there's a sequence where she has this horrified look on her face, and the camera kind of pans past her, and then she suddenly gets back into frame, and the music starts up again. You know, I love moments like that, you know. And Regina Hall is back as well. She's adorable, and there's a lot of other familiar faces that you'll see from some of the other films in the series, Carmen Electra, Bill Pullman, and others. And like I said, it started out like Gangbusters, but just got progressively weaker as it went along. But hey, the special effects were pretty doggone impressive for a low-budget movie. Well, maybe not too low-budget, but just
that was say. That was something I wanted to mention. I was really impressed by how well they were able to mimic the look of stuff like War of the Worlds and pretty much everything else. I mean, the look of it was just dead on. Real quick, let me interject here. Hot Shots, that was actually directed by Jim Abrams.
Oh, okay. Thank you for pointing that out.
But I don't know. I mean, in terms of this sort of movie, I mean, both Zuckers, Abrams, all of them, they're the David Leans of this type of movie, you know? And it is a little, you know, it's like, it would be a little sad to watch David Lean, you know, directing the sequels, you know, to somebody else's franchise. But I don't know. Like I said, I think you know what you're going to get if you're interested, and I liked it on that level.
So extras-wise, were you happy with the extras?
I was happy with the extras. I mean, this isn't the sort of thing I was really looking for a lot of in-depth stuff. You know, there are a couple of featurettes on David Zucker, which I thought were actually pretty nice, you know, to watch. You know, I chuckled a few bits. You know, there's one called, I think, David Zucker, the Man in His Laugh or something, where they're just talking about him, you know, sitting behind the monitors laughing. And I don't know, it's just kind of a fun, good-natured thing to watch.
Seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, he really does. A lot of deleted scenes that really, you know, don't necessarily add up to a whole lot.
Basically, a lot of extensions and some stuff that they kind of cut for time, stuff that didn't work.
I am getting pretty tired of the whole unrated marketing ploy. I never saw the original version. I didn't catch this in the theaters. But
neither did I.
I'm really sick of DVDs being, you know, they're making a huge deal about it being unrated when that really means nothing.
Zush.
What they're doing, they're implying, you know, that there's something naughty, or, you know, some more, well, let's face it, they're implying there's more nudity, there's more sex, or anything,
right.
Because that's what that, you know, unrated triggers in your brain, I think, but not that I was, you know, necessarily disappointed that that wasn't there, but okay, just quit it. That and the, next week we'll talk about the stupid special edition names.
All right, that sounds like a plan. Well, you know, I'm kind of, I want to give it a marginal thumbs. I'm kind of sideways on it. I give it kind of a sideways recommendation. If you're into this kind of thing, great. But if you're not, you're not.
It's not going to convert you.
get you all out of here. I promise you.
Inside Man is the latest Spike Lee joint, and one marking the fourth collaboration between the esteemed director and Oscar winner Denzel Washington. It's a well-paced mixture of a heist movie and detective story pitting Washington's Keith Frazier, and that's Frazier with a Z, just like Liza, up against criminal mastermind Dalton Russell, who's played by English actor, and the man many of you felt should have been the next James Bond, Clive Owen.
Let's cut the crap first. You don't order an assault when no hostages have been killed and there's no immediate threat. Second, if it ends that way, whatever happens, you don't get to be the hero. You want to bullshit me, try harder. Let's go.
Casually paced for some taste, I thought this was an extremely entertaining movie and a terrific change of pace for Spike Lee. Stan, your thoughts?
I agree completely with you on Clive Owen being James Bond. but I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. It was just lacking something. This is that, you know, it's just that whole magical quality. It's like, you got a good director, you got a great cast. Loved it. I love all the actors in this movie. I was looking forward to it, and it just lacked something. I don't know what it was, but it just didn't do it for me. I really like the Jodie Foster character.
I did too.
I love that. I would almost like to see her in a movie of her own, you know?
And I liked that she was playing a character that wasn't in the typical Jodie Foster mode. Kind of this shady character, you know, taking care of things underhandedly, and you didn't know if she was on the good side or the bad side. And I just found it really entertaining.
I found myself in a weird way while I was watching this movie. I kept thinking about a better movie, Bill Murray's Quick Change.
Yeah, another heist movie.
I don't know why. I just kept thinking back to that line Bill Murray's in Quick Change where he goes, "Hey, baby, up your butt with a coconut." That has nothing to do with my review. I guess I just like quoting that line.
So you were just hoping for somebody with big shoes and a clown mask
I don't know. I guess ultimately the payoff wasn't there.
I'm not completely disagreeing with you, but I think it's much better than what you're putting it up to be. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Well, I mean, I don't mean to slam the movie, but I guess we approach this differently because I'm not saying it's a bad movie necessarily, but I wouldn't go up to somebody and say, "See Inside Man." Would you?
I would say, don't expect the wheel to be reinvented, but I think you're going to have a good time with this film. It held my interest. I didn't see certain things coming. I liked the direction. But the only thing I didn't like the soundtrack. I thought the soundtrack was kind of, you know, phoning it in. You know those kind of soundtracks where, you know, they're trying to tell you. They may not mean to tell you what's happening, you know, plot-wise with the music, but that was about the only thing that really annoyed me.
There were some odd choices in this. Some of the music and, I mean, I'm all for being different. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing that, but there were parts in this movie where I was like, what is that all about? what was that shot? The weird shot of Denzel Washington, the little dolly shot of him basically vibrating, walking down the, and it's, I mean, you look at that and it's like, yeah, that's a Spike Lee shot, but it seems belongs
out of
in
place.
It belongs in a different Spike Lee movie.
Well, it's Summer of Sam.
Yeah.
Well, extras wise, any comments?
Extra wise, you know,
of was really good.
The making of, I was really surprised. I was so bored and I was kind of going through the extras and all of a sudden I found myself wrapped up in the making of. You know, I love that there's, you know, like this home video footage of the table reading, you know, the first time they gather all the actors around. And that was great, you know, and seeing, it was fun listening to Spike Lee talk and the actors and all this. And just as I'm just getting into it, it ends.
It's only around 7.5 minutes long. And yeah, that was disappointing.
And if this thing had been like half an hour long, I probably would recommend this disc based solely on that.
Right. Well, the deleted scenes were also interesting in a weird way. I am so glad that they took out that 15-minute interrogation scene. Mm-hmm. You know, they split up the interrogation moments throughout the film, and there's one deleted scene here where there's an interrogation sequence that goes on for 10 minutes, and while it's interesting, it's well edited. Oh, if they had put it into the movie that way, I could have seen some people walking out. It was boring. So what about the commentary?
It's okay to listen to, but I found, you know, he was doing a lot of, well, here's a crane shot. Well, here's another crane shot. You know, there was a lot of that and didn't seem to me to be a whole lot of
no insight.
Yeah, I was like, well, okay, why did you use a crane shot? You know, it was like I don't like commentaries, and I don't think a lot of people do when people are just simply describing what's, you know, going on screen.
And that's one thing that we talked about earlier with Brett. You know, in some instances, I think it's better to not have a scene-specific commentary and have something prepared to talk about right. rather than, you know, this is this and that's that. I was expecting more from Spike Lee, mm-hmm. given his cinematic output over the years. He's a very intelligent man, very well-read, and a terrific filmmaker, but mm-hmm. just it was kind of a disappointment.
Absolutely. And he even says, I thought it was interesting, you know, on the commentary, and I'm sure this is pretty much common practice these days, but he was doing the commentary the night this movie was premiering. And, you know, he even says at the beginning, you know, that he's used to having, you know, a perspective on these movies, you know, where it's like he kind of liked the fact that the movie was still fresh in his mind. And maybe because it was so fresh in his mind, he didn't really go into I don't know.
It'd be interesting if they go back to this as kind of, you know, a special edition or the even more inside edition. You know, what's going to come? It's going to happen. It seems to happen with every movie.
The
nowadays.
Unrated, even more inside. The insider edition.
And the final extra on the disc is number 4, which features a little laid-back kind of conversation between Denzel and Spike, talking about their collaborations going all the way back to Mole Better Blues. I've always wanted to say that, by the way.
It's nice. It's a nice little segment. I mean, I always like, you know, these little kind of, you can tell that the guys are friends, you know, they're just kind of sitting around talking, you know, conversationally. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, those are, for me, those are the most fun things to watch. And, you know, nothing special, but a nice little addition.
So, in other words, two good featurettes for you. So-so movie. I guess it boils down to what you're expecting. I think if you keep your expectations low, it's a good film. But if you're kind of excited for it, you may find yourself a bit disappointed. You know, Stan, a couple of shows ago, we were talking about Ren and Stimpy, and I'm wondering what your feelings are on the characters that form the basis of the next title we're going to talk about, Beavis and Butthead, The Mike Judge Collection, Volume 3. Okay, 1993, these two incredibly stupid high school dimwits who spend half their time, I have to know what you think about these two dim-witted high school idiots that gave Mike Judge his start.
You know, I remember when this show first came on, I guess the problem I had with it was they were a little too much like the real high school idiots I went to high school with. And therefore, it just wasn't something I wanted to spend a whole lot of time with. 12, 13 years later, I don't know, my opinion hasn't really changed a whole lot. I like Mike Judge. I like some of the other stuff he's done.
I mean, King of the Hill, that's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Absolutely, and there are touches of that sort of thing. You can sort of see, you know, the early seeds of that in some of these Beavis and Butthead episodes. I think it's an acquired taste. It's either you like it or you don't. For me, a little bit of it goes a long, long way. There's some funny stuff in there. There's some very funny stuff in there. But to me, after a while, it gets a little bit like nails on the chalkboard. I'm like, okay, 30 seconds is enough.
I'll tell you this. I think the way that this set is presented is a big problem, because if you remember the basic format of the show, they would have a short that would be divided up into like two segments. You know, they'd break for a commercial, then they'd come back and finish it up, and then would come, which was pretty much the highlight for me and a lot of other people my age out there, is when they made fun of those videos, mm-hmm. which were just absolutely hilarious. But the way this set is set up, you have two discs of the cartoons and a third disc which has nothing but them riffing on music videos. Mm-hmm. And for me, it just killed the momentum. I mean, just because, like you said, a little goes a long way.
It does, and I'm sure the rights issues for some of those music videos have got to be a nightmare, and I guess there's really no other way for them to present them. But you're right, there is something just very disjointed about the whole thing, and maybe that was unavoidable, but again, I think if I were a Beavis and Butthead fan, I think I'd be pretty disappointed by this set.
I am. You know, I'm not a big, huge fan like some people you and I know.
I did like some of the interviews with Mike Judge. I did find it kind of interesting. You don't often see this sort of honesty from somebody, I think. I mean, at least in terms of, I mean, here's a guy saying pretty much he wanted out at this point, and he thought it had run its course. And I thought that was kind of refreshing to hear. So I did like some of the behind-the-scenes stuff on the disc.
Yeah, there's the original uncut Frog Baseball, which started it all. And this is like the third in a series. It's been like a three-part series that's been spread out over all three volumes. The Journey of Beavis and Butthead. You've also got the Christmas clips, letter to... I have to admit, I did like the letters to Santa Butthead. Those were hilarious. Beavis and Butthead's interview with Chris Connolly, their appearance at the 2005 Video Music Awards, promos. I mean, for the real consummate Beavis and Butthead fan, this is probably the nearest thing to heaven they're ever going to see. Mm-hmm. But one thing I wish, I don't know if it's appeared on either of the other two sets, but when they were on the David Letterman show and Letterman smacked them. I mean, just, my God. I hope there's a volume four down the line and they can get the rights from Worldwide Pants for that, because that's just still one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
And I certainly mean no disrespect, you know, to people who are fans of the show. I can certainly understand.
We're sorry if you're stupid.
See, whoa.
I'm just kidding.
Bottom line, if you're a fan of the show, I don't know. I guess there's enough on there to keep your interest. I still find the whole set, you know, lacking just a bit.
It's just a shame that they could not get the rights to all those great music videos, especially, I don't know if Separate Ways by Journey has been on any of the other two, but, you know, looking back, I can kind of see why they were making fun of that video. But anyway, and no offense to Journey fans out there, you know, just, you know, but anyway, let's move on.
We're coming low out of the rising sun, and about a mile out, we'll put on the music.
Music?
Yeah, I use Wagner. It scares the hell out of the slopes. My boys love it.
Hey, we're gonna play music!
Big W6 Eagle Thrust. Put on Sayawara up. Make it loud. Into the Romeo Foxtrot, shall we dance?
A clip from Apocalypse Now, available now on Apocalypse Now, the complete dossier, available from Paramount Home Video. Now, for those of you, I don't think there's a whole lot new that can be said about Apocalypse Now, but for any of you younger listeners out there who may not be familiar with the movie, here's a brief synopsis. Indiana Jones tells President Bartlett to hop a boat with the young Morpheus so they can go up a river to meet up with Easy Rider and kill the Godfather while listening to the Doors. All of this is masterfully told by the director of Jack. Jeff, your thoughts?
It's been a fun show, everybody. We'll see you next time. No, where can you go from here talking about a brilliant piece of filmmaking? I think the Daily Mail says it best. Out of the 50 films to see before you die, this ranked as the number one film. And I cannot help but agree. And it just seems to get better and better every time I see it. I mean, Platoon was my favorite war movie of all time, but after seeing this twice for the show, this is the champ in my war movies section. I mean, it's just absolute, it's a masterpiece. What else can I say?
That's the exact word I was thinking of. I mean, there's no hyperbole here. I mean, it truly is a masterpiece. I'm sitting here getting goosebumps just thinking back on the movie. And, I mean, I had seen it before. I had seen it, I don't know, I guess when I was a teenager, so it wasn't like I was unfamiliar with it. But I watched this. Actually, I watched the Redux version, which I had never seen before.
Right.
Just blown away. And here, just a few days later, I find myself going, I want to watch that again. I want to watch the shorter version, because I think a lot of people prefer the shorter version. And I think after watching Redux, I can kind of see, you know, why a lot of this was left out. But my God, I was watching this movie and I kept thinking, you could pause this movie on just about any frame and it's like a painting. Mm-hmm. You could just sit there and stare at your TV. It's just amazing.
I'll say this. I still can't believe that this movie did not sweep the Oscars in 1979, 1980. I think Kramer versus Kramer was the big winner that year. And no offense to Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep, the little kid, Jo Beth Williams. But this was just, I think the wounds from Vietnam were just so fresh at the time that the Academy mindset didn't want to reward a movie like this. And if that's the case, and I think it is, it's a shame, because this pretty much says it all for me as far as what the Vietnam experience must have been like. It was just very trippy, very hazy, very psychedelic, very mind-numbing, and almost to the point of insanity. And you can see it in the very first scene where Martin Sheen's in that hotel room. You know, the montage of fireworks in, you know, the area where you've got all the trees ablaze, and then you cut to this little, you know, kind of a divided image of the fan whirling in the hotel room, mm-hmm. and Martin Sheen on his back and looking out the window, Saigon, you know, oh my God, you know, I'm still here. And just the way they worked the doors, the end into that first scene was just absolutely, this is going to be the B review. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. It keeps getting better every time you sit
there. It's hypnotic. I mean, it's like being in a dream watching this thing.
So you didn't like Redux as well as the original cut?
I don't know necessarily. Like I said, I haven't seen the original cut in quite a while. But after watching Redux, I want to go back now. And I think a lot of people recommend, and I kind of wish I had done this, was watch the shorter version and then the longer version.
Yeah, that's what I did, yeah.
But I mean, what does it say about a movie when, you know, you watch it and 2 days later you're like, God, you know, when you're watching, how long is this? Three hours?
Well, the original was about 2.5, I think. And I think the Redux version is about 3 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's close to 3 hours. How, you know, you watch this 3 hour movie over two nights and the next night you're like, I want to watch that again.
You know, the thing I love about this DVD is that you have the option of going to an expanded edition or staying with the original, depending on your mood and the free time you have in your day to watch it. For me, the Redux was fascinating because a lot of the characters were more fleshed out. For example, there's Albert Hall as Chief Phillips, and the death of one of the major characters, you know, that funeral scene, it just really got you, you know, in the heart. I mean, you felt for this guy. I mean, he were two characters that, you know, were so close to one another in this insanity, and then one of them dies tragically, and just, you know, you just feel that pain, what it must have been like, mm-hmm. you know. And the scene with the Playboy bunnies, you know, kind of a lighter moment. You get to know the characters of Chef and Lance a little bit better. Lance the surfer, you know, in the middle of Vietnam. For some reason, I found that hilarious in mm-hmm. some offbeat way. Sam Bottoms, a wonderful job of acting. Frederick Forrest, Albert Hall, whom I mentioned a minute ago. Scott Glenn, you know, practically an unknown at the time, just right on the verge of urban cowboy. And what about a malnourished Harrison Ford? I mean, I gotta know what you thought about that.
Looked like he could have used a cookie.
Looks like he could have used more than like a batch of cookies, as a matter of fact. If I'm not mistaken, he came directly from the set of Star Wars to this film. And just,
yeah, they talk about how, I think Coppola talks about how he thinks Ford was nervous. And you can tell that in the performance. And what's mm-hmm. so weird is, I don't think I've ever seen Harrison Ford look like that. I mean, downright gawky and uncomfortable and nervous.
But he just suited the role.
Oh, absolutely. Bottom line, if you've never seen this movie, get it. The price on it is incredibly...
It's like they're giving it away. Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, you know, take advantage of it, because who knows how savvy they'll get in the future if you don't pick it up for a bargain price right now. Mm-hmm. But, oh, Stan, we have got to talk about Robert Duvall as Lieutenant Colonel Bill Kilgore. What a hell of a performance. In a career that's been dotted with great performances from Tender Mercy to The Apostle, I mean, it just doesn't get any better. I mean, really, when he's out there drinking coffee and, you know, just pretending that everything's okay and bullets are whizzing by him and all that, I mean, he's almost like Patton Jr. I love this guy and loathe him at the same time.
It's testimony to how great a movie is when the line, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning," has been, we've heard it so many times. We've heard it parodied so many times. Yet you watch it and you're singing in the context of the movie and it's like you've never heard it before.
Right. It's just amazing. And the scene in the helicopter where they're shooting down the Vietnamese, you know, it's heartbreaking, and yet, you know, I'm not a war kind of guy. You know, I could, you know, we could turn this into a completely different show if we wanted to. But I'm telling you, if I'm forced to fight, I want a guy like Duvall's character in front of me. I'm telling you, because he's just absolutely, he's running the show and he knows what to do. Nothing phases him. And just once he's gone from the movie, I don't know if you felt the same way, but I actually kind of missed him.
Yeah, I did a little bit, but I don't know. I think there's just so much to love in this movie. You know, I quickly forgot about that. And, you know,
You got a very young Lawrence Fishburne, then known as Larry Fishburne. You've got G.D. Spraulding, a great character actor. And what about Mr. Easy Rider himself, Dennis Hopper, as a photojournalist? I mean, just absolutely killed me. I mean, his tone was just dead on and perfect for a guy that was in the midst of this craziness.
Absolutely. I mean, you can probably pick out every performance in this movie. And
there's not a single bad performance to be found.
There's not. And I don't know. We're just gushing over this movie, and for good reason. So let's go on to the DVD, shall we?
Agreed. I think the only criticism I can find in this set would be the lack of participation from Martin Sheen. And you know, we were talking about this earlier. You know, I'm wondering if some deep-seated resentment still lies between him and Francis Ford Coppola, because there's just no traces of Martin Sheen to be found, unless I missed something, and I don't think I did. I think I went over this whole set like a fine-tooth comb.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it is a little strange that you don't.
And
really
didn't he suffer a heart attack on the set of the movie?
Yeah. I know a few people have been disappointed that they're not including the documentary Hearts of Darkness on this.
Oh gosh, yes.
It doesn't really bother me. That's sort of, you know, a film on its own. You know, and again, for the price and what you're getting on this set, doesn't really bother me a whole lot. There are two minor qualms I think a lot of people have. Well, I don't know how minor they are, and I guess it depends on your priorities. I know a lot of people aren't too thrilled about the fact that each movie is split over two discs. You have in the first disc, you have the option to watch the first half of either version, and likewise on the second disc.
And I believe it's seamless branching, right? Unless they were able to...
Each movie is done separately. There's no seamless branching, so they did it that way. Personally, it doesn't bother me. I've got an old Laserdisc player. It never bothered me to have to get up and, you know, change the movie, especially when it's something this long.
Well, maybe somebody can correct us if we're wrong, but I believe there was an intermission when it actually ran theatrically. I could be wrong, but just...
Supplemental materials, they talk about originally they had intended there was going to be an intermission, but they later dropped that idea, I think. The other qualm about it, and it's been a complaint about other home video releases of the movie, aspect ratio. This was originally released 2:35, and Coppola, for whatever reason, prefers this at home to be seen 2:1 instead of 2:35. So you're not getting the entire picture, and okay, it's a decision by the director.
He's entitled to it. I mean, his baby. He's
certainly entitled to it. I guess I don't quite understand that, because we are in the age where, I mean, I can understand that if people have, you know, smaller TVs, but we are getting into the age where people now have, you know, widescreen, high-definition sets. I don't see, you know, the little black bars being as much of a problem as they, you know, maybe, and maybe that's not even his reasoning. Maybe just for whatever reason he thinks it looks better that way. I guess the anal retentive part of me does still wish we could get a 2:35 version of these movies.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when HD comes around, if it ever comes around, but that's another story. Commentary-wise, excellent. I mean, I could listen to Coppola for hours. I mean, it was so full of stories and recollections and what have you. Just probably one of the top five commentaries I've heard.
As entertaining to listen to as watching the movie, almost. You know, I mean, he's just a fun guy to listen to. And I mean, to me, nothing's better than when somebody so obviously loves movies, you know, and that enthusiasm comes across. It's a great listen.
We're not going to have time to talk about every extra on here, but a couple things that really caught my attention were the AV Club featurettes on the birth of 5.1 sound, the ghost helicopter flyover, the synthesizer soundtrack article. I mean, this is must stuff for budding filmmakers. Wouldn't you agree?
And for any movie lover, I think. Go out and get this. I mean, the supplements, I mean, it's all gravy. It's a great movie and great supplements on top of it. I'm sure people could nitpick at it if they wanted to. I'm crazy about it. This is the best DVD release I've seen in a while.
This is probably a shoe-in for my top 10 of 2006, which I'm looking forward to. We're just like months away from Christmas time, but I can rest assured that this will definitely be amongst my top 10 DVDs of the year, and possibly the top 10 DVDs of all time. I'm proud to own it, and you should too. Wow. Can you believe we're out of time and out of movies?
Yes.
Okay, I guess that's a cue to kind of wrap it up, and we will. But before we part company, matter of fact, I'll tell you what, we're going to go across the border to our good friend Shane McDonald, who's going to tell us about what he and Jeff Reynolds have in store. Shane?
Hi, this is Shane from the Canadian Connection of the DVD Marquee. We're going to have a great show lined up. we're going to be looking at two special editions coming from Fox. We're going to be looking at Romancing the Stone and Jewel of the Nile, starring Michael Douglas and the voice of Jessica Rabbit herself, Kathleen Turner and Danny DeVito. We're also going to look at a film that earned an 84% rating over at Rotten Tomatoes from Maple Pictures, Aquila and the Bee. And let's not forget the Warner Brothers remake of the Poseidon Adventure, simply known as Poseidon. So join us here on the DVD Marquee.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you, Jeff. Looking forward to your show online here at www.thedvdmarquee.com. Before we leave, we got to say thanks to the Home Theater Forum, iCraveDVD.com, and we got to put in a plug for Podcast Alley, because let me tell you this, folks, we just learned a few days ago that we are number 21. Well, a bullet. Well, maybe not a bullet. I'm thinking Billboard Magazine. Anyway, but we're number 21 in the movie and films category. Is that not great or what, Stan?
Woohoo!
So we appreciate your votes out there, and we want to keep that momentum going. If you're digging what you're hearing, give us a shout out at podcastalley.com. There's a direct link to that site on our website, so look for it. It's kind of got to scroll down the page just a bit, and it'll be to your right. All you got to do is just enter in your email address. You'll get a confirmation email in return. Send that baby back, and you've done your part. And we do appreciate all the support that we've gotten so far. Stan, another great show. It's been great to have you here. You're just doing a banged-up job, and I just appreciate you more than you know.
Well, thanks a lot. You're doing a great job, too. I'd also like to say, Roger Ebert, get well soon. We miss you.
Oh, man, right back at you. My favorite writer, the best film critic to ever walk the face of the earth. We really do hope he gets so well sooner rather than later.
All our best wishes to Roger and his family and friends.
Definitely, right from the heart. And before we go, last week we lost one of the greatest actors to ever appear on film or television, Bruno Kirby. And if that name doesn't ring a bell, he's one of these guys that you semi-recognize, but just you can't really recall him by name. I have put together a little montage of audio clips devoted to his memory, and just sit back and be amazed at the work that he did in an all too short life of 57 years. We'll see you next time.
Sto figlio di puttana, non c'è in casa. Aspetta, aspetta. Minchia, ma cacchiamo la sala. Non credo casa raggia.
Please welcome to the microphone the lieutenant of laughs, the officer of oral, the Westmoreland of wit, swinging Stephen Hauk.
Hello, Vietnam, and greetings. Soon, the news. Then, Lieutenant Steve. Who's that? It's me, old pal Frenchie.
Listen, Frenchie, let me ask you something. Do you like good food? Oh, but of course, the French love good food. Well, then I guess that would make you an Edie Gourmet. Oh, Lieutenant Steve. Oh, Frenchie. Oh, Lieutenant Steve. Frenchie, you know, I really shouldn't kid Frenchie, because sometimes he stand gets mad at me and he could out-hurt me. Lieutenant Steve, let's play some music. Okay, Frenchie, what would you like to hear? Well, I love a good polka as much as the next man. Well, a good polka it is for my good friend, Frenchie. I think some apologies are in order.
So I say to her, don't you love me anymore? Do you know what she says? I don't know if I've ever loved you.
Ooh, that's harsh. Don't bounce back from that right away.
Thanks, yes.
No, I'm a writer. I know dialogue, and that's particularly harsh. Are you saying you can say things to her you can't say to me?
No, it's just different. It's a whole different perspective. I get the woman's point of view on things. She tells me about the men that she goes out with, and I can talk to her about the women that I see.
You tell her about other women?
Yeah. Like the other night. I made love to this woman, and it was so incredible. I took her to a place that wasn't human. She actually meowed.
You made a woman meow?
Yeah, that's the point. I can say these things to her. And the great thing is, I don't have to lie, because I'm not always thinking about how to get her into bed. I can just be myself.
You made a woman meow?
All right, Ed, your best day. What is it, twins in a trapeze? What?
No, I don't want to play.
Come on, we did it.
I don't feel like it.
Okay.
A I'm 14 and my mother and father are fighting again. You know, because she caught him again. Caught him. This time the girl drove by the house to pick him up. And I finally realized he wasn't just cheating on my mother. He was cheating on us. So I told him. I said, you're bad to us. We don't love you. I'll take care of my mother and my sister. We don't need you anymore. And he made like he was going to hit me, but I didn't budge. Then he turned around and he left. Never bothered us again. But I took care of my mother and my sister from that day on. That's my best day.
What was your worst day?
Same day.